On today's episode of the Launchpad Podcast, we are talking about the Jayson Tate extension, the Brooklyn Nets starting to fall apart, and it looks like Eric Gordon still has some interest from the Philadelphia 76ers and former Rockets GM Daryl Morey. So don't go anywhere. We have a great show for you today on the Launchpad Podcast.
Houston, Roger, we copy and we're standing by for your TV.
They throw it up, oh, there goes
Jalen Green. Humans can't fly.
Rebound picked up by Green, who's back in. Plays it ahead of Moore. Back to Green. Oh, and in time for Thanksgiving. But there's plenty of yams to go around for everyone.
Welcome in to the episode of the Launchpad Podcast, presented by Clutch City Control Room. As always, I'm your host, Don Knock. I'm joined by my fellow host, Paolo Alves. You can find me on Twitter at Don Knock. You can find the pod at Clutch City CR. If you go into the bio there, you can find the link tree that has the YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcast links. We again want to thank everyone that's been leaving YouTube comments. They've been great. Thank you for that. Paolo, to the people where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, y'all can find me on Twitter at PaulAlvesNBA. That's PaulAlvesNBA. Everything I do, from podcasts like this one to the live shows on Twitter Spaces, we'll find itself linked on there.
And today we are joined by a friend of the show, a fellow Clutch City Control Room contributor, Biased Houston, a.k.a. Will. Will, tell the people where they can find you if they've been living under a rock.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff at Bias Houston. You know, we do all the spaces, content aggregation, all that good stuff over there. Apparently, we also influence, you know, measure decisions. You know, we got somebody drafted number one. But then also check in on Brado and Will. Don't laugh, Paul. I'll check in on Brado and Will on Instagram and Twitter as well. The podcast me and Brad do for Clutch City Control Room. So we're doing some great stuff over there. So check that out as well.
Perfect. So this episode's coming out a little bit late. We wanted to wait just in case something happened with free agency, and something did happen, not specifically with the Rockets, but you know, something's going on with the Brooklyn Nets. We'll get to that in the second segment. But something did happen with the Rockets, and they extended Jayson Tate. There were some rumblings about this. I think Fagan had mentioned something about it in an article. But Paolo, we'll start with you real quick. What do you think of the Tate extension? Do you like the number? Do you like the years? And let's go from there.
I mean, it's a steal, right? So for reference, for those who were shocked that the Rockets didn't pick up the option on like the last day or something, it was because basically what they did was, if Tate hit, they basically agreed with Tate's agent, like, how much money he would get if the Rockets picked up the option and then re-signed him to a 2-year extension. And Tate wanted, or Tate got $22 million, right? But what they did instead is they declined the option and they spread that through 3 years instead. And so the average salary per year is lower, which is good for the Rockets since they this year are nowhere close to having cap space, so they don't really care about that extra little bit of wiggle room. But it does set them up to have Tate for a little bit cheaper next year when they have cap space, or and the year after, when they might still have cap space if they choose to delay or to sign 1-year deals with whatever free agents they decide to get. And then besides that, there's two little important things. They are kind of nitpicking, but the Rockets got right. The first one is it's a descending contract, which means he makes $7 million this year and makes $6.5 million next year, which means the Rockets earned a little bit, earned $500K there of extra cap space when they actually care about it, once again, because they don't care this year. And somehow, some way, they got a player option on the third year, which to me was kind of bonkers, because I thought it was already good value for Tate, let alone enough to warrant the player option in the third year. So, I mean, happy for Tate to get paid. I think it was a really team-friendly deal. I was expecting him to get closer to $10 million, and even then, I wasn't quite expecting a team option. So, I mean, fair play to them. They knocked it out of the park.
Will, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Paul touched on a lot of the good things about the contract, being that it's descending. There's a player, I mean, a team option last year. So, you know, it gives a lot of flexibility and control to the organization. But I was one of the people who's been pretty high on Jayshon Tate, like, even before all of the KJ Martin drama that came out a couple weeks ago. Like, I was saying back then, way before that, that if I was given the option of keeping KJ or keeping Tate, I'm keeping Tate. And the reason I said that is because I think that you have to look at a guy like Tate who is as versatile defensively as he is. He can guard one through five on occasion, right? Like, I think back to that Lakers game we played last year where he guarded Russell Westbrook, LeBron, and AD in like a 30-second span. It was something crazy like that where he did a good job as anybody can on all three of those players. And those are all three different type of players, you know, play three different positions. You know what I'm saying? Three different play styles, and he did as good of a job as anybody can on those three players. And I think for his position and his role, he's a very high IQ player. He's played point guard for us a couple of times. He'll make the right passes. I know he kind of got a label as being a little selfish towards the end of last season, because there are a lot of times where he would get the ball and try to go in transition and not necessarily look to pass or outlet pass to Jalen or KPJ. But I think it's a product of Steven Silas's system that we have guys who just get the ball and go. I think that's less to do with Jayshon Tate and more with just the system that we run. But yeah, the man, I think he's a high IQ, unselfish basketball player. He's willing to make the right passes. And I've always said that if Jayshon Tate can get a league average jump shot, he goes from like a really good role player to like one of the best role players in the NBA. If he can, you know what I'm saying, he can be respected from the 3-point line. I mean, I look back to the Utah Jazz game we played last season where Rudy Gobert didn't even guard Jayshon Tate. Like, he just left him, and he's funny, he's on Minnesota now, but Rudy Gobert just left him wide open. Like, he didn't even care about him. He was just free safety the entire game, and that, you know, that clogged the lane. It made it a lot harder for some of, like, you know, Jalen and KPJ to be effective, because they had a 7-foot defensive player of the year winner, you know, every time they would come into the paint, he was right there. Like, they really couldn't do much about it. So if Jayshon Tate can make people respect his jump shot enough so where that can't happen no more, oh yeah, man, he's going to be incredibly valuable to any team that's trying to win a championship one day. And I mean, they've been saying, this could just be Rockets propaganda, but they've been saying this man's been in the gym and he has been working on his jump shot. He's been knocking around a lot more. I'm pretty sure Jayshon Tate knows that his jump shot is the one that's going to hold him back from being as impactful as he wants to be in a playoff setting. So I hope he's working on it. It sounds like he is. And I mean, if he is, man, like, we just got one of the best role players in the NBA for a really team friendly contract.
Yeah. And I want to touch on another little thing about Jayshon, which I really like. He's that enforcer type of guy. He's the type of guy that will give you 100% effort. And it's been reported that he's one of the leaders in this locker room. And even if he doesn't develop the jump shot, like Will is saying, at a price this low, I would still like to keep him at this price regardless, because that's $2 million than what David Nwaba is earning, and David Nwaba signed the contract like 2 years ago, which with inflation, you get what I mean. So I think it just makes sense all around. And another thing that I wanted to touch on is there were people last year complaining about Jayshon Tate bringing the ball up, Jayshon Tate posting up and demanding the ball at certain occasions where you kind of don't expect a role player to do that. Jayshon Tate having tunnel vision. It looks like a different Jayshon Tate than what we saw the first year. And I would say that a big part of it was, well, he was a player that was coming out, that was on the second year in the league on a minimum deal, that had an option the next year for the minimum, that was more than likely looking to get paid. He already got paid, and I think that's another positive, right? I don't think his attitude towards the game will be I'm not going to call him a self-centered player, because he's not, but it will be more selfless than it was before. It was already pretty selfless, but even more than it was before, because, well, now he has the financial security, at least for this year and the year afterwards. So I think that also helps a team with so many young players to have Tate already secure and earning probably a little bit below fair money, but still locked up for a few years, because then he's going to be even better at letting those players have the spotlight, Jalen Green in specific, and using the playmaking that we know him for, which I think he showed more the first year he was here than the second one.
So I guess my thoughts on this just generally are, I was someone who was in the camp that we should probably trade Tate rather than KMJ because Tate would have more value around the league. Given his contract at the time, you know, it'd be easy for a contending team to absorb that, you know, for whatever type of asset they want to send back. Now, you know, he's on an $8 million contract, still very team friendly, still very movable. If a, you know, contender would want to bring him on, since that time as well, we've had the KMJ trade request. So, you know, that's kind of shifted the calculus there as well. I think for me, like the roster crunch, you know, bring in Tari Eason in the draft. Then you have KJ and Tate really all kind of having, I guess not overlapping skill sets, but, you know, somewhat blended set of skills there. KJ and Tari shoot about the same, at least Tari from the NCAA three-point line, of around 35-36%. And then Tate's down a little down low, I think at like 32. So you have a little bit of separation there. You know, we'll see what Tate's shot looks like this year. I think, you know, could we see Tari in the G League this year? You know, possibly as well, especially if they're, you know, I can't see them trying to, you know, showcase KMJ that much. But you know, it's something that may be possible if you know a deal isn't made before the season starts here. But, you know, the Arenas rule that was mentioned, you know, that kind of insulated the Rockets here. Another team wasn't going to be able to give him over 10.5 anyway. But, you know, the Rockets number still didn't get up to the 10.5 as it is. Like Paulo said, you know, still lower than the David Nwaba contract. But I think just to kind of put a bow on this, you know, it's a good deal. A lot of flexibility left. And, you know, I think the team is – I'm not going to say the team is higher on Tate than the fan base is, but I think, you know, they definitely value a lot of the things that Will is outlining there, you know, his value in the locker room, how he plays, you know, being an example for the younger guys. You know, this, if the team ends up moving Eric Gordon, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, you know, there's not a lot of guys that aren't 21 on this roster. You have Boban and David Nwaba, that's pretty much it. So, you know, having Tate there, who, even though he's not, you know, even a player on Eric Gordon's level of pedigree, he's someone that can really set the tone for the locker room, set the tone for the practices. And, you know, we heard even going back to when James Harden was here with Tate for those, you know, couple of weeks and stuff about how Tate was, you know, fiery in practice then and really getting after it then. So, you know, his whole time here, he's really been that way and really been able to, you know, have an impact with his work ethic and things like that. So I'm definitely happy for Tate that he, you know, was able to move up to a bigger contract this year. Happy for the Rockets. They got all of the positives of this contract with, you know, the team option and the lesser average annual value. But do you have any closing thoughts on Jayshon Tate?
Yeah, another detail that I forgot about. I think the third year that is a team option also has a partial guarantee, or not a partial guarantee, but an incentive there that's tied to team wins, which is good because the way incentives work is they are determined to be likely or unlikely depending on what if that incentive would have been achieved the year before or not. If it's team wins, the Rockets are projected to be one of the worst teams in the league this year, which means towards the cap that incentive will probably count as unlikely, which means that as towards cap space and towards trades and towards everything, his cap hold will probably be lower in 2024, right? Which means that if we have cap space that helps us with it, if we have a trade, he'll have a lower salary. And with that, and they do this, and Tate probably took this because the Rockets are planning on being good in 2024. So he will likely make the money anyways. It's just a little bit extra flexibility if they want to move him or if they're still planning to have cap space at the time. It's a little, well, once again, one of those little tidbits that favors the Rockets a little bit that Stone managed to sneak in there.
All right, last point on this. Do you trust Draymond Green working out with Jae'Sean Tate, or is he going to try to injure Tate like he did to KPJ? What do we think?
Oh, no.
I've always said, too, like that's the player. Like when he signed with us in 2020, it was late 2020, 2021 season, I always said, like, he reminds me of a less defensive, versatile, and not as high IQ player, but he looked like Draymond. It looked like a light version of Draymond. So, like, I think him getting in the gym with Draymond, somebody, if that's, like, his player role model, like, yes. Like, every team needs a Draymond Green on their roster. Like, you're not winning a championship without one. And so, like, yeah, if that's what he wants to get in the gym and work on, shoot, I need him to teach Tate how to do those illegal moving screens that they used to set on us all the time back in the day, man. Like, let's start bringing Jabari and Jaylen off of moving screens. Like, let's get away with that now.
I want to tell another thing about this Draymond stuff, right? I don't like Draymond personally. I don't think most Rockets fans do. But being objective, I don't think Draymond is as successful as he's been with the kind of game that he has, unless he has someone like Steph Curry. Like, because this is a guy that can shoot, right? And we've been talking about with Jae'Sean, you need to be able to shoot. Because, well, first of all, you won't be as good as Draymond, most likely, I mean, almost definitely. But also because you're not playing with Steph Curry. And I mean, Jalen Green's obviously better, but whatever.
You're not 6'10 Clay, so that's like half the battle.
Yeah, so since you're not playing with Curry, you need to be able to do a little bit more on offense than what Draymond does. But then other than that, it would be still a really valuable player as long as he doesn't lose sight that the first priority would be to get a jump shot, in my opinion.
I have a question. I don't know if you want to go, Don.
No, go for it.
Okay, so I have a question. So it's just a funny one. But Paolo said that he doesn't like Draymond. I actually, as a Rocksman, I actually don't dislike Draymond. I like him. I like what he brings to the table. He's a guy who, you know, like say, gives 110% effort every single night, and you don't have to question that. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of like Draymond, and Clay. It's Steph that I don't have any love lost for. So I was gonna ask you, Paolo, and Don, you can answer too. Of those three, would you rank them from most liked to least liked?
First of all, and we'll get into this in the next segment, breaking news, the Brooklyn Nets have rescinded the qualifying offer on forward Kessler Edwards. He is now an unrestricted free agent. The Nets only have his non-bird rights to sign him back. So they can basically only give him a minimum. Which is weird because he was good and he was young and he would be an asset had they kept him. So why are they just letting him go for free? It's something that's quite surprising, and he's definitely someone who, as the Rockets, I would be looking at. He's 21. He's a 3-and-D wing. He's 6'8". Good size. I mean, I will take a look at him. Although we do have a lot of wings. But to answer your question about the Draymond, Curry, and Klay Thompson, I mean, the one I dislike the least, so I'll just not fiddle with the words. The one I like the most is Klay. I think that's it's like
yeah, that. Me too.
I like Curry more than I like Draymond. Because when I look at Curry, I can see the merit and I can see, hey, this guy's like an all-time great. When I look at Draymond, I see a flawed player that only worked out because he was playing with Steph Curry. Because I don't think there's many teams in the league that can afford to have such a null on offense like Draymond is without having the generational shooting that Steph Curry has. And then besides that, he's a dirty player. Like, I don't care how you spin it. I don't care if we're going to get Warriors fans on the comments. He is absolutely a dirty player. And in my opinion, one of the dirtiest players the league has seen. It's not a coincidence that you have in basically every playoff series a moment where he's contesting a shot and he fucking and he like smacks people in the face and with like his like with his hand like with his fingers like a claw trying, like, I don't care if it's a basketball player or whatever you want to call it. He's trying to injure people. He's trying to get their eyes. It's a cheap way to get a player to be worse than he usually is without hurting him long term. And it's not a coincidence that it always happens with the best players on the team, with LeBron, with Harden, with who's the other guy that he just did it to? I mean, it happens all the time.
He kind of did Jaylen Brown a little bit.
Yeah, he did it to Jaylen Brown. Like, it's not. You can tell he's an enforcer. No, he's 30, and he wins games based off of stuff he shouldn't win games for. He's a flawed player. He has been an all-star for God knows how many years, or he was an all-star at a certain point in his career. And he never improved at anything. And he has clear flaws in his game that he basically hasn't improved upon. And you can tell that he's regressed to a certain extent. If he used to have a floater, and he doesn't anymore. Like, how are you getting worse? Like, you're not that old.
I mean, he always wasn't going to age super gracefully because his game was built on being like very explosive and undersized. So, I mean, I think the thing that tailed off for me, which is kind of surprising, is his finishing at the rim. Like, he was a decent finisher at the rim for a while, and that kind of fell off. But, you know, I'm actually going to side with Will on this one. I actually, you know, what Draymond Green did in some of those series against the Rockets, I was like, I've never seen anything like this, like, you know, short of Hakeem. Defensively, so you know, he did some crazy things defensively. I would say I definitely hate Steph Curry the most.
Well, how many
Draymond Green the second most, and then Clay the least.
How many players, like, if players were allowed to be as bad as he is on offense, you'd see more players you would have a better chance at seeing players as smart as he is defensively. The problem is, if they don't develop offensively, they don't have a role in this league anymore for the last 8 years. And so, if you put Draymond in any other team, he will still be a super smart defender, but he won't be able to stay on the court offensively. That's the thing. If he's not playing with Curry, I don't think he has a role.
Oh, I mean, I don't think he's I don't think it's as bad as what you're describing. I think he wouldn't be as effective if he was on a team that didn't have two of the greatest shooters of all time. But I mean, that's not why I like him. I just like him. I don't like Steph. Steph has done irreparable damage to my hopes of winning a championship one day. So no, it's
fan base.
Yeah, it's not Steph.
But yeah, I mean, what you're saying, I don't necessarily disagree with Paulo, but I don't think he would be totally ineffective on other teams. I think he would be less effective. But I mean, we rolled out lineups last year with like two and three guys that couldn't shoot. And
yeah, and how many games did we win? Lineup.
Well, we also didn't have, like, you know, some of the talent that they had. I mean, if Jae'Sean Tate was playing with Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson, I'm sure he'd look
pretty good. Well, that's the point. If Draymond's not playing with Curry, Durant, and Klay Thompson, he can't play. That's the thing.
I mean, like, no one. We just did a segment on how, you know, this is a good contract to give to Jae'Sean Tate, right? And then we're saying Jae'Sean Tate's a reduced version of Draymond Green. So I don't think that there's just no place in the league for him entirely.
I mean, Draymond's a better offensive player than Draymond Green is. Besides the passing, right? When it comes to putting the ball in the basket, he is. His current version, Draymond, he is. I'm sorry.
I mean, what would you say versus like peak Draymond though?
I mean, versus peak Draymond, it's different, but it still doesn't change the fact
he's getting older now, so it's like, this should be peak Tate.
Is this peak Tate? He's 26.
I mean, age-wise, I mean, he should be coming into the 27 to 32, I say, his peak.
He's still not at his peak, so he could still get better.
And hopefully he does. We'll call it there. We've gone a little bit long now in this segment that I thought was going to die like 15 minutes, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little about something more positive for the Rockets than comparing Draymond Green to all of our players. And that is the Brooklyn Nets seemingly imploding in front of our eyes. So y'all are not going to want to miss that. So stick around. We'll be right back. And continuing into our second segment here, we just talked a little bit about the Jae'Sean Tate extension. And now we're going to talk about the Brooklyn Nets doing what Raphael Stone planned for them to do the entire time after he made the James Harden trade. And that is for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving to approach management and request a trade. I believe Shams was the first one that reported it. Do I have that incorrect?
It sounds right.
Big Shams fans here. Brian Windhorst also was on the beat of this. I was an early Windhorst supporter, and now everyone is coming around on him. So, you know, I've always been here. Welcome to the Windy Wagon, everyone. People really enjoyed his monologue. What?
The what?
The Windy Wagon. Yeah.
Will it be the Wendy Wagon like next year?
Yeah, I mean, I was already planning on doing that. So,
okay.
I don't know what y'all are doing. I know Brad said, well, we won't get into how much film Brad's watched so far. We'll leave that for him. Just to talk about. But yeah, so and it came out, I guess that was that Thursday?
That was it Friday. Thursday.
Okay.
It was the day of free agency, so.
So the day of free agency, Thursday. Yeah, they tweet out that Kevin Durant has approached management, or actually, I think he went into Joe Tsai's office himself and expressed that he didn't want to be a member of the Brooklyn Nets moving forward. Since that time, we've had some decent reporting. I don't know. I listened to the Hoop Collective podcast, and on there they said the expectation for them is that a deal will get done with the Phoenix Suns. They also mentioned the Philadelphia 76ers having interest and the Miami Heat. The Heat, and this has been covered a little bit since the trade request has dropped, but it would be difficult for the Heat to do a package that includes Bam Adebayo because Bam Adebayo and Ben Simmons can't be on the same team due to the designated rookie extension contracts that both of them are on. That adds a level of complexity to any deal between those two teams. When we were in a space the other day, someone had mentioned Denver and mentioned Michael Porter Jr. As being a designated player extension. I actually looked into it and he is not. So Denver is a possibility that they could work for because Michael Porter Jr. is not on that designated player extension. But let's start with Will. You know, let's start with two things. You know, how did you react? I was there, so I kind of know a little bit, but how did you react when you heard about this news? What did you do for the next couple hours after that? And then, you know, do you have a team preference on where Durant gets traded to?
So my reaction to it, I mean, like I said, you were there. It was extremely happy. I mean, I was ready to throw a party. Now that KD and Kyrie are gone, you know, James Harden's already gone. You know, with the Rockets owning all of Brooklyn's draft capital until 2027, I mean, we're on the cusp of having some of the most valuable assets in the entire NBA. Now, granted, they may not be as bad as they were in like the 2014, 2016, 2017 era when Boston had their picks, but I still think we're going to be looking at much. I mean, obviously Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are gone, so we're going to be looking at much better picks no matter who it is that gets traded to Brooklyn when those guys leave. But yeah, I mean, I was excited to see that they're gone. I mean, we've been hearing about this tension between KD, Kyrie, and even James Harden to an extent, between management for quite a while now. And I was on record saying that even if they don't implode this offseason, you know, when the Kyrie Irving was like, you know, when it was reported that he might be wanting out and then he opted in, like even though that happened, I was saying then, I was like, this isn't over. Like, they are one more season away from, you know, one more disappointing season, one more season where KD gets hurt and Kyrie takes a hiatus mid-year and they're done. Like, so like, I'm not surprised at all that it did finally come to fruition. I'm happy that it did. I'm happy that Rockets fans are going to get that last laugh that we were told not to have when James Harden was traded, because they would never leave Brooklyn. And then here we are, was it 2 years later, and all three of them are gone. So, yeah, I mean, I'm ecstatic. I'm happy that it finally happened. And then to your second question, I think he's going to Phoenix. I think that's the team that, like, even before he put a request, I was like, yeah, that makes too much sense for KD. I'm over there. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and KD probably that wins a championship if everybody stays healthy. But yeah, and I think that's at the top of his destinations, and they have the assets need to go get him. So I think that's where he ends up. But for my Houston Rockets agenda, I kind of hope he doesn't. I think that DeAndre Ayton, although I don't know if he's under that you know, that restriction that you were talking about. I don't know if it can work out.
Depends on the contract he signs.
Okay, yeah. So I don't know that much, but like, assuming in a vacuum, right? Aiden Bridges, Cam Johnson, and picks, that doesn't win you a championship. That probably makes you a 10th seed, but I would prefer if they were a 15th seed. So I would hope that's not what happens. My preferred like destination with the Rockets agenda in mind is more along the lines of the Portland Trailblazers, right, where they could probably get like a Shaedon Sharpe, maybe sign and trade Anthony Simons and a bunch of picks, and you know, send that to Brooklyn. because Anthony Simons and Shaedon Sharpe is not winning you more than 30 games. So, yeah, I think that that would be the best outcome for the Houston Rockets agenda. But I think they're going to be interested in not bottoming out regardless. So, like that's why I said, I don't know if they're gonna, the picks are going to be as valuable as those Boston Celtics picks that they had, you know, the last decade. But it's still, I mean, it's KD and Kyrie leaving Brooklyn is a great thing for Houston Rockets fans. So we should all be happy and celebrating.
So just a little clarification, it was Woj that had it first. The other thing is, he mentioned that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving had no contact with the franchise after Irving had opted into his deal Monday. And a sense of inevitability existed that Durant would eventually ask for a trade, sources tell ESPN. And that happened June 30th. Yeah, I think when the Kyrie stuff happened, I think I was a little bit more resigned to, you know, they're probably going to play out this season and then Kyrie would walk after next year and then maybe Durant would ask for a trade then, which, you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world because this year we're owed a pick swap. So, you know, the chances of us being lower in the rankings than Brooklyn or in the standings than Brooklyn is still pretty high, you know, just with the way our roster is constructed. And if they make any more trades, you know, with Eric Gordon or KMJ or something, you know, you can have even younger players playing at that point. But, I mean, accelerating this now has kind of a two-front thing for me. On the one hand, KD having another year on his deal, they're probably going to get a better return for him. And secondly, like Brooklyn starting this rebuild this year, you probably are going to accelerate when those picks are bad. And so it's probably going to be in the next few years versus I think it would have been a little bit more beneficial for the Rockets to have those picks really hitting like a few years down the line. So that way, like once we're, you know, really reaching contention, you still have these top picks coming in. So this is kind of compressing that timeline to me to where we're probably going to see the Brooklyn Nets be, you know, extremely bad in 2022, 23, 24, 25. And then by, you know, 26, 27, you know, they're starting to come out of it. Or, you know, because Durant has so much time on his contract, you're going to see them be able to flip him for some pieces that are going to leave the Nets, I'm going to say like in a Pacers-like situation where they have okay players that kind of keep them middling in treadmill status, but, you know, not bad enough to really be getting picks that, you know, are giving them crazy lottery talent, right? So let's say they flip KD to Phoenix and they get Bridges and Ayton back, and you have Simmons, Ayton, Bridges, core with, you know, a number of picks coming in and whatever they're able to get for Kyrie. You know, that's a team that it's not a title contention team at all, but, you know, that team will probably be able to win, you know, maybe 30, 40 games, and it won't be completely bottomed out. And again, like I said, this year it's okay because we have the pick swap anyway, but, you know, the next couple of years, you want to see that erosion really take place and have them, you know, get down to the bottom five of the standings in the East for sure. So you can get, you know, picks at the lottery and, you know, shots at getting a top pick if they were to jump up. So I think, you know, Kevin Durant leaving at the end of the day, overall positive for us. Kyrie Irving leaving as well, definitely a positive for us. Get rid of the super team and, you know, really bank on those picks. Paolo, before we go over to you, I've heard some discussion and dialogue about, you know, because Brooklyn may get a really good return for Durant, this may be the time when these picks are the most valuable because people don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of uncertainty. And so these picks seem very valuable now versus, you know, if Brooklyn is able to get a good return for Durant, they could go into more of a treadmill situation like I talked about, and the picks never materialize being top picks. So do you see any value in maybe moving some of these picks for something right now? Or do you think we need to, you know, let the picks play out and end up drafting with them?
I think in theory that makes sense. I think in the real world that actually doesn't, because it's like people, I think when people brought that up, they were talking about it like it was a stock, right? And this is like everybody's speculating, and so the picks are really valuable, so you should trade them right now for the best value. But the difference is you can trade the picks for money that you can then spend on whatever you want. The thing about the NBA is you can only trade with the offers that are available, and there's no one currency that can be translated and they can be spent at any time, right? And so you, if the right deal came along, sure, but I highly doubt that the right deal will come along before KD's traded. So it's more of a theoretical thing than I think a practical thing. It's really hard to picture a scenario where that happens. But then about the KD thing, I don't think, Joe Tsai just wants to at least be decent forever, and he wants a team that plays hard, and I think they will get a lot of assets for KD. First of all, because as opposed to Harden, they're trading him in the offseason, which means teams will be able to build around KD, and more teams will be interested in trading for KD and then building a team around them, rather than during the season where your flexibility is really limited. You don't have the extra roster spots. It makes it tougher to extract max value. I think the Nets will probably get a bidding war out of it. I think they'll probably get, if not an all-star, or it might be an all-star in a few picks. It might be no all-star, but a young prospect in a lot of picks. One of those two. And I wouldn't be surprised if they used some of the picks that they do get back immediately to upgrade their current roster and with pieces that are not win now, but are like in the in-between. Guys that are 27, 28 years old, they can help right now, but also don't expire or don't become... or aren't assets that are going to lose value over time. I think they'll try and stay middle of the pack, which is better than what the situation we had before, where people just assumed that they would eventually fall off, or only the last couple of picks would be good. I think when you're trying to be mediocre or you're not going all in on one thing or the other, what happens is you're always just one mistake away from being a bad team. And the other thing is the Nets are building around Ben Simmons. The one piece that's left is Ben Simmons. That's not a reliable player. And his game, even at full potential or even at what we've seen of him, is not an easy player to build around. It's not any star that's going to fit with Ben Simmons. It just brought back Nick Claxton. So you're assuming he's your starting center. You've already got spacing issues. And you don't even know what the other three players in the starting lineup are. If you're bringing in DeAndre Ayton, then it's even worse because you're forced to start DeAndre Ayton. Oh, damn, there's a fly here. You're forced to start DeAndre Ayton, and he doesn't fit whatsoever with Simmons. I mean, if Embiid had trouble, DeAndre Ayton, unless he learns how to shoot all of a sudden, which I think is more likely than Ben Simmons learning how to shoot, then that lineup doesn't work either. And so it's not just that I think they'll get a good return. I'm not sure how that return will fit on the court. And then again, when you're aiming for mediocrity or you're trying to be the best you can be, but not actually going all in, right? It's a really slippery slope because the NBA is very much made of teams, even more nowadays, that are either bottoming out or going all in. And so that middle ground can fluctuate quite a bit based on injuries from other teams. And so when you look at the East right now, let me pull up a list of the East teams or the Eastern Conference's results last year, right? Miami is clearly going to be better than Brooklyn. Boston's going to be better than Brooklyn for the foreseeable future. Milwaukee, the same thing. The Sixers, the same thing. The Raptors might be, might not be, but they've been doing this for a while, and they're a really competent organization, so I would trust that they will continue to be. The Bulls, probably the same thing. And then you've got all of these teams. Atlanta will probably be with their win now trade that they just made. But then you've got all of these teams that are on the come up, right, that might not be better than Brooklyn right now, but will certainly eventually be better than Brooklyn. We've got the Cavs, who just were unlucky last year. You've got the Hornets, who are on the up and coming with LaMelo Ball. You've got the Knicks in Washington, who I think will be worse than Brooklyn for the foreseeable future because they are in that purgatory mode. Indiana, I think they are they might be better than Brooklyn in a couple of years, depending on who they add as draft picks, with Tyrese Haliburton there. And then you've got Detroit, who I think they're a couple of years away from passing a Brooklyn team that's built to be a mediocre team. And Orlando's probably a little bit further away as well. But what I'm trying to tell you here is there's only two teams that in the future, in the next 5 years, I would probably project to be worse than Brooklyn the entire way. And if you can't get into the sixth seed, then you're going to be in the play-in. And so you're, at the best case scenario, I think they are a play-in team. So you're always one or two games away from falling out of the play-in and being a lottery team. And if you are a play-in team, if you are on one of the lower seeds and you fall out of the play-in, then all of a sudden that's the 10th best odds for a top pick for Houston. So this balance that they will try to strike is really dangerous, which is why teams usually try to be either bottom out, take a big package and rebuild, or be, or still go all in. I think it's, no matter how you spin it, it's really good for Houston. And so just, we're in one of the best situations in the league with Jabari and Jalen as core players, and the Brooklyn picks. Another topic next year, and the Brooklyn picks coming down the pipeline.
All right, you want to do some conspiracy prognosticating here?
Let's do it.
Sure.
So the free agent center Bismack Biyombo has agreed to terms on a return to the Phoenix Suns. So do we think this means Durant is definitely going there? Do we think Durant's definitely not going there? We're basing everything off this signing.
You missed that. There's another bomb.
Another signing.
Darius Garland signed the maximum extension, which means he's also a designated rookie, which means he's another guy that can no longer be traded for KD.
Oh, the Cavs would be KD. Dumb to trade Garland.
They
for
would.
KD
they anyways. Would, but at least now we're sure that it's not going to happen.
That's good for my anti-Cavs agenda. do y'all think this Biyombo signing means anything?
Nah.
No. He's a third string center to me. I think he's probably making a minimum anyways.
Let me see. I think the deal is over a minimum. Well, no, it doesn't say. I think this says Durant is definitely going there. They're trying to get guys in the cheap. There you go. It's my my prediction.
I mean, like I said, I think that's where he ends up. I'd be very shocked if he ended up anywhere else, just because they have like some nice building blocks in Aiden Bridges and, you know, the Cam Johnson. I'm not sure what their pick situation looks like, but I mean, I feel like that can be figured out going forward.
They
but,
have all their picks, I believe.
Okay, so yeah,
so that's another thing that makes them very enticing as a trade partner for the Nets, right? Is they could give the total pick package. That also, I will say, if you're giving Ayton, well, say giving, you know, if you do some sort of sign and trade with Ayton, when you trade Bridges, I think at that point that's enough going back that they wouldn't need to do the full seven picks of four picks and three swaps. They may be a little bit less, and you know that could help Phoenix in the long run. But yeah, I think, you know, just positionally asset wise, I think they're really in the prime, you know, driver's seat. And you know, we made fun of the Suns for not getting Eric Gordon for a pick this year, but you know, that may now end up having set them up for, you know, this Durant trade. So, you know, you never know. Maybe the Suns knew that Durant might ask out. But yeah, you know, having all their picks and assets is definitely a big up for them. I think the other place I would be comfortable seeing Durant go would be Portland. Just because of the way Portland's roster is constructed, you're going to be getting really a pick and young player package coming back at that point. I think Brooklyn, if he did go to Portland, then Brooklyn, they would really be set further back than if they did the Phoenix package.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I said for my pick agenda, a young player, like a really young player in pick
like a Shaden Sharp.
Yeah, Shaden Sharp. That's what. Yeah, so somebody like that, yeah. A rookie sophomore player, and then picks is really good. Versus, like I said, I don't think DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges even wins you a playoff series. I think that's a play-in team, but. I'd rather them be the 15th seed than a playing team. So,
yeah,
that's where I stand. Sure.
And I think just, you know, kind of reading the cards and reading the twos I've heard on some of the pods I listen to, I think Brooklyn is going to try to get something that's going to make them as competitive as possible, because they know that we have all their picks. Because when the Rockets, I mean, look at the way the Rockets have done their rebuild, right? Everyone kind of knows that we're in this little valley right now where we had the Thunder had our pick. Thankfully, it didn't convey because we had the top four protection on it. And then now we're in the time where we need to make sure that, you know, we're bad now. Then once we start giving the Thunder our picks again, then we're not giving them – we're more competitive, so we're not giving them a top five overall pick, especially because – and this would be a little bit different with the Rockets and the Nets. But, you know, with us and the Thunder, they're in conference, they're in division, right? So giving them those picks is additionally painful, but also a rival. So you don't have those factors that are going with the Rockets and the Nets that you do with the Rockets and the Thunder. But I still think, you know, all of those motivations that we feel as Rockets fans to be good as soon as possible, once we start owning their picks, I'm sure the Nets are going to be, you know, under that same type of emotional structure on how they want to handle it. But we've gone a little bit long. We're going to run a break here. When we come back, we're going to have a little bit about Eric Gordon, and I want to talk about the Utah trade that happened yesterday as well. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And moving into our final segment here on the Launchpad podcast, before we move on to Eric Gordon and the latest news about him, Paolo, want to talk a little bit about the designated player extension. So, Paolo, take it away.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to mention that as the free agency and goes on, we'll see more and more players get signed to the designated rookie extensions, and it's important to keep track of, because every player that signs one of those cannot be traded to Brooklyn for KD while they have Ben Simmons, and it doesn't look like they're moving Ben Simmons, which means if you're looking at fake trades on what's the name, on Bleacher Report or whatever, Take into consideration that your Devin Bookers, your Bam Adebayos, your I think Donovan Mitchell, your now Darius Garland, now Zion Williamson, now all of these guys, right? They won't be able to be traded to the Nets as the centerpiece for a KD deal. So you can slowly go and discard different teams as their main guys sign extensions. First of all, because they signed an extension so they can be traded right away. But even if Brooklyn held off until they're tradable again, they would still not be able to trade for those types of players. And that's mostly what I wanted to point out before we move on, because I think that's important for people keeping up with the KD saga as time goes on.
Definitely going to be important. And, you know, that's something we'll be monitoring, I'm sure, as Rockets fans, until KD gets moved. But, you know, in some news closer to home, let me track this down. Oop, I lost it. Okay, well, anyway, Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer, I believe, put out an article last night. And in that article, Philadelphia Inquirer. In that article, he had a brief little blurb on there that talked about how Eric Gordon is still being sought after by Daryl Morey. Let me see if I can find it. Give me one second. Okay, here we go. The Sixers made acquisitions to help with the deep postseason run, he says. So they'll definitely have to improve on the recent playoff performances, but the team knows it still needs reinforcements. That's why Daryl Morey, the team's president of basketball operations, hopes to acquire Houston Rockets guard Eric Gordon this summer in a trade. So, you know, it's going to be more difficult for this trade to happen now, just because Philly has already given up their logical salary matching piece of Danny Green. Paolo, do you see any way that they could get that trade across the line right now? I think they'd have to probably do a few deals to open something up.
I think they can, with Karkmaz and I need to pull up the names because I forget. But these are not your usual NBA names. It's Karkmaz, it's Niang, it's Thibault. Basically, what the holdup is, I think, right now is, well, we just want a first-round pick. And Philly wants Eric Gordon, but Philly doesn't have a first-round pick that's tradable. And so Philly is taking these players that they're willing to give to Houston that have some value, like Matisse Thibault, like Georges Niang, to some extent, Jaden Springer drafted last year might, if they're willing to deal him, they're trying to get a first to send to Houston for Eric Gordon, right? And I think this is why these trade talks have dragged on for so long, and why the interest from Philadelphia is rumored for so long, but still nothing has happened, is they're still trying to get that first from a 13. And with the KD situation, and then before free agency, right, it's hard for a team to give up a first for a piece that would very much be just a complementary piece in case they strike out on someone or struck out on someone in free agency, right? Like, you know, Matisse Thybulle, he's a nice player, right? But you're not gonna go for Matisse Thybulle if you can find someone in free agency for a minimum to play the same role as he does. But if you can't, and you've got your team set towards the end of the offseason, then all of a sudden it does make sense to maybe give up a first or protect a first, a late first, whatever, for a guy like Thybulle, if someone has a guy like George Springer, for example, not George Springer, Clayton Springer, down in his Astros jersey, got me confused. So from the Springer side as well, right, going into the season, you'll know if you need, if you're a young team, if you'll need a backup point guard or a shooting guard, however you decide, however position you decide Springer wants, should play. And so once in the KD drama just spread even more uncertainty throughout the league, right? Because teams are now trying to trade for KD. And once they do, they'll have to settle down their rosters and actually build a functioning roster, because you don't know exactly what you're going to have to give up for a guy like KD. You don't know what the Nets want. And once again, it's probably just something that will get resolved once rosters are settled down. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the interest is there for much longer, but at this point I would say that the safest bet is that Gordon stays in Houston. He might get dealt at the deadline, but I think at this point the Rockets really value Eric Gordon's vet presence, and they don't quite value second round picks or lesser assets enough to overshadow that vet presence. And the fact that they are also trying to prove a point, right? Because they've said that they had a first for Eric Gordon ever since the trade deadline last year. And you don't want to be known as a team that leaks out to reporters that you've got something and then you don't, because teams will more often than not call your bluff because you haven't been right before. So why should I believe these rumors now? And so standing your ground also has advantages from a negotiating standpoint going forward.
Will, do you have any interest in doing an Eric Gordon trade?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I was I'm pretty sure I would have qualified as an Eric Gordon hater maybe 2 years ago. So absolutely. I want him to I think he deserves the right to go compete for a championship. He's done everything that Houston's asked him to do over the last couple of seasons. He's been a great vet, a great locker room presence, the definition of a professional. I've been saying this on TL and Spaces. I think if you were to pull Eric Gordon to the side and off record, off camera, as someone he trusts, and ask him, do you want to go win a championship or do you want to stay on this team? He's going to tell you, I want to go win the championship. And so I think that he deserves the right, as someone who's done really good by us, that it's time we do good by him and let him go go compete for a championship. I think what Pablo said is accurate. I think the holdup is not the lack of interest in Gordon. It's the price point, especially the price point of his current contract, and the teams that you know would have interest in him may not have, you know, the salary and the first round picks to throw at Houston, which is all it's all we need, man. I don't know how you guys feel, but I would take pick 30 in next year's draft for Eric Gordon and call it a day. Like, I would just, if pick 30 gets him onto a contender, we get a first round pick. And then, you know, worst case scenario, all we do is we do what OKC does and just delay the pick, or maybe we package it to move up in next year's draft, but whatever. I would just take the cap, I mean, the cap, the pick flexibility of the last pick in the first round next year and call it a day for Eric Gordon. I think he deserves that right to go compete for a championship. I think, unfortunately, it's looking like he is going to be on the roster next season, because I think the Sixers are the team that's expressed the most interest in him. They're trying to get the gang back together over there in Philadelphia with James Harden. They got House, Daniel House. They got PJ Tucker already. Then they, it was somebody else they signed, right? That used to play for the Rockets. Who was it? What's the Trevelyan Queen? They got Trevelyan Queen. He went over there, polished a player. You know, like they have a lot of former Rockets over there. And I think Daryl Morey is trying to put together that you know, a lot of those players that he really likes. So I think Eric Gordon's the next one up. But I think that, you know, like Paulo said, they don't have a first round pick that they can trade. So I think it's easier said than done finding a third team to support, third or maybe even a fourth team to supply that first round pick that we need to move Eric Gordon. So it might be a deadline decision. But yeah, I mean, I want him to go. I want him to be able to compete for championship. And then conversely, I want the Rockets to be able to give all of those minutes that Eric Gordon was going to have to one of the young guys we brought in, you know, this draft cycle. We have a lot of promising young players who are going to need some minutes. And, you know, when Eric Gordon's here, it's going to be a little difficult to manage all of that. But, you know, I think it just makes too much sense for both sides for Eric Gordon to be on a different team next season.
I will say, I think we talked about it last episode, if not the episode before that, but it was brought up, you know, is Philly just showing interest in Eric Gordon, you know, as a favor to GM Rafael Stone to, you know, help them move Gordon in a different package. And, you know, the interest from Phoenix was brought up. You know, both of these teams are going to be in the Kevin Durant sweepstakes. So from my vantage point, I would expect that any Eric Gordon deal is going to happen after the KD stuff kind of, you know, sorts itself out. But, you know, it seems like Philadelphia really does have a legitimate interest in bringing Gordon there. I will also say, you're going to hear this a lot this year, but they really are becoming the Philadelphia Rockets with House being there as well as Tucker. So, you know, throwing Gordon in the mix too would be funny. Basically, you know, the Rockets plus Embiid rather than Capella. And I think, you know, a lot of people would probably agree if, you know, if the Rockets had Embiid at that time, they probably would have beat the Warriors. So
they're missing CP3 though.
They are missing CP3, but they have Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah,
exactly. Tyrese Maxey is, you know, better, not a better facilitator than CP3 was, but I think definitely better at being able to get to the rim and really utilize his elite burst in a way that, you know, when you have Harden and Embiid that can command double teams, someone that can attack as quickly as Maxey can is really setting you up for a good advantage and a good mismatch. But, you know, to bring it back to the Rockets, I think, you know, me and I was tweeting with Roosh Williams, you know, friend of the show earlier in the week, and he said the same thing that I had mentioned of that. It seems like they would like to move Gordon, and like what Will said, I'm sure Gordon would like to be in a situation where he could be more competitive for a championship. But from the Rockets front office side, it just seems like they're totally comfortable taking this all the way to the trade deadline, if not, you know, the end of the season. So, you know, Gordon being here, starting, taking some of the minutes that people would want, Tari Eason, Jayshon Tate, KMJ to get, you know, at the three. I think that's something that we really need to buckle up for and expect that's going to happen, especially if the Durant stuff, you know, goes, you know, even into the season. I will say one other thing with the Durant stuff. I think it was the Kawhi Leonard saga when he was getting traded from, traded to the Clippers, or signing with the Clippers, but it was a similar setup where you were going into the July 4th holiday weekend and everyone was like, you know, when is this going to happen? When's this going to happen?
He held it up.
Friday passed. Yeah. July 4th passed. And then, after that, then once July 4th holiday was over, then everything started to sort itself out again. So it wouldn't surprise me now. I mean, it's Saturday right now when we're recording. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Durant stuff goes past Monday and it goes to Tuesday before that's resolved. So, you know, any Eric Gordon trade, like I mentioned, I think will have to happen after the Kevin Durant sweepstakes ends. So, you know, I would expect at the very earliest to see any sort of movement on a Gordon trade. We would be waiting for like Wednesday or Thursday of this week. So that's kind of how I see the Gordon stuff shaking out. And again, like if he was here until the trade deadline, it wouldn't surprise me. If we get a pick coming back for him, right? I mean, that pick's not going to materialize to the draft anyway. So I think the front office just doesn't really see that urgency. I want to talk a little bit about the Utah stuff.
Can I add one thing on the the Air Gordon thing real quick?
Yeah, I'll make it real quick. I just want to say something real quick on Utah, too.
Yeah, so the thing with Eric Gordon, so I have to look at, I just spent my segment talking about how I want him going, but I have to look at things from a glass half full kind of perspective. And I think if Eric Gordon isn't traded, it's not the worst thing in the world. He is, like I said, he's professional. He's a great vet, and we're a really young team. So having somebody like that that the young guys can look up to and kind of look at as like a mentor, as a role model for how they should, you know, direct their NBA careers. He's great in that. And then his skill set is really, really good with our predicted starters of KBJ, Jalen, Jabari, and Shingun, right? He's able to space the floor for those guys, and he can guard multiple positions. And that's one thing that we were going to kind of maybe struggle with if Jayshon Tate's jumper isn't where we thought it was, or, you know, Tari Eason's jumper. Like a lot of our wings outside of like Garrison Matthews, they have the same weakness in it, that they're great versatile defenders, but they're not the best floor spacers. And so, like, that was one thing we were going to kind of struggle with if we did move Eric Gordon. It was like, how are we going to, you know, deal with the spacing dilemma when you have, you know, Jayshon Tate and Shingun, who are two non-shooters, starting together. So Eric Gordon kind of absolves that problem for us. We can have adequate spacing for, you know, the guys to get into the paint, for Shingun to do what he wants to do. And like I said, he's a versatile defender. So our defense in the starting lineup with Jabari, KPJ, Jalen's getting better. And then Eric Gordon, like, I think that, you know, our defense would be really solid. So those are the two that I wanted to add.
Yeah. So just to be real quick on the Utah stuff here, you know, Utah traded away Rudy Gobert. I'm sure everyone's seen that by now. Now the thing to do will be to watch if they move Donovan Mitchell. And if they do end up moving Donovan Mitchell, there's kind of been some back and forth on whether they're interested in that or not. The latest I've seen is that, you know, they would have some interest if they got the right deal. I think that's another thing that would probably wait till after the Durant sweepstakes as well. But, you know, my point here is, if they do end up moving Donovan Mitchell, that's another person, or sorry, another team that's, you know, in the tankathon sweepstakes with us at that point. They're not going to get anyone back that's going to, you know, leave them as competitive as they were with Mitchell and Gobert. So just something to watch. Also for the people that Will being one of them, you know, the tank versus, you know, make the play-in run, you know, as more of these teams kind of shake out, we'll have Oklahoma City, it's going to be, you know, somewhat bad. We're going to have San Antonio is going to be somewhat bad, and now Utah. So now, you know, the swing range for the Rockets is, you know, 15 to 12 right now, somewhere in there. So, you know, one or two more teams trades away a star, one team, you know, has some injuries that go on, and that's when you could see maybe the Rockets could get even closer to 11. But it's still, for me, I think the calculus is just, I don't think enough teams are going to be non-competitive this year for the Rockets to really sneak up actually into the play-in. You know, maybe we're competing for that 11 spot if, you know, everything hits and everything goes right. But, you know, I just wanted to note, you know, before we wrapped up today and we get past this down the line of, you know, you have to add Utah now into the Wemby sweepstakes, the Scoot Henderson sweepstakes, and the Thompson Twin sweepstakes as well. So are y'all worried about Utah as a team that could out-tank us, or you think, you know, we'll be fine and keep it pushing from there?
The Gobert trade will be up there with the worst trades I've seen ever since I started looking. I started keeping up with the NBA. I think he's a great player. Don't get me wrong. Two things: he's making a super max. You have Karl Anthony Towns, and I'm not sure how you're going to run Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns, especially knowing that they both get cooked on the perimeter. And then the other thing is, you gave up 4 firsts in the swap, if I'm correct. You're giving up, you're the Timberwolves.
Really 5 if you count Walker Kessler, which, yeah, I think was like pick 22.
Yeah, and you're giving up picks all the way until 2029 as the Timberwolves, a team known not to be perennially great, a team that struggles to make the playoffs most of the time, that's had a really bright young core for years, and only made it when they had Jimmy Butler. I don't know. Personally, I think it's one of the worst trades I've seen. I think it will heavily backfire. I think Utah got a steal. Just like the Rockets are going to be able are punishing Brooklyn for having their picks, Utah is going to be able to do the same with the Timberwolves. And they're all unprotected except for the last one, that's top 5 protected, except for 2029, which is top 5 protected. The rest of them are all unprotected. And wow. Gobert's 30, right? They do have Anthony Edwards, so they will, I think they'll be relevant for a while. But even with Anthony Edwards there, if you're stinking it up and if your team's it's got no picks, the thing with Cat and Gobert doesn't work. Anthony Edwards is not going to want to stay there. He's going to request a trade if you don't win or if you reach a point where you can't realistically upgrade your team any further. And you just hamstrung your ability to, I don't know how stingy or non-stingy the Timberwolves owners are, but you just hamstrung your flexibility from a cap standpoint real heavily because you just paid Gobert's on a Supermax. You just paid Karl Anthony Towns a Supermax as well. You're going to have to pay Anthony Edwards in a couple of seasons. You still have D'Lo and you have Jaden McDaniels, who's a role player who probably need to get paid eventually, I think in a year. And so the way I see it is Timberwolves just accelerated their path to contention, which is fine. They were a fringe playoff team last year. I'm not sure if Gobert's the answer, especially at that price.
Especially with that, I don't know about how y'all feel about it, but I think that Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert fit is really like wonky. Like I think back to, I said this yesterday, but if I told James Harden and Chris Paul in 2018 that you would be playing Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns in the front court the next night, them boys would go hit the club. They wouldn't need a good night's rest. They would just come in the next day, half sleep, half hungover, and pick and roll that team to death and win by 20. That would be food for them. So I'm not a huge fan of that pairing.
Yeah, I when I first saw the trade, I was immediately thinking, you know, is Towns going to get moved behind this or what's the deal here? But you know, Towns can't get moved for 6 months because he just re-signed his contract. So it would be interesting to see how they play out there. But I do think it is also important for Minnesota as a team that, you know, they're going to have a similar star timeline to the Rockets because Jalen and Anthony Edwards, you know, are close to the same age. So interesting to watch from that perspective. We'll see what the team looks like. But, you know, it feels very Dallas-y in terms of we've accelerated our timeline to win, and this move may hurt us in the future. We may have to, you know, do some triage-type maneuvers down the road to bail ourselves out of this. But that's going to do it for us for today. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Don Knock and follow Paolo at Paolo Alves NBA. You can follow the pod at Clutch City CR. If you go to the description there, we'll have the YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify links on the link tree. And Will, tell the people where they can find your stuff.
Still find me on Twitter, Instagram, at Bias Houston. And like I said earlier, shout out Brido and Will. Podcast coming every Monday. It's Brido and Will, Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff. Check us out.
Cool. So until next time, y'all, be safe and go Rockets.